All right, and we're back. You are on Straight Talk with Redfield on AM 970 WSTX, and a good Happy New Year again, St. Croix, St. Thomas, St. John, Water Island, and a pleasant good afternoon. And we're going to switch to our first guest here, Mary Jane Mapps. Am I correct?
Well, it's actually Mary Jane Mapes.
What is wrong with me? What am I, looking at this phonetically?
Well, it could look like maps, but the E in there sort of change. I always tell people it's like apes with an M in front of it.
Well, why are you trying to confuse Holland this morning or this afternoon?
Well, that's a good question.
All right, Mary, let's talk a little bit about how would you best define yourself? Again, you are the Non-Aligned Leader Institute, right? That's quite a mouthful.
The Aligned Leader Institute,
right.
Yes, that's a training organization that we have, leadership
mm-hmm.
development and training organization. We
All
do
right.
executive coaching, that sort of thing.
Well, let me ask you, create relationships with anyone, anytime, anywhere. What a feat that is, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but it's something that is definitely worth it if people are experiencing the pain of miserable relationships. It's really a breath of fresh air when you know that it doesn't have to be that way.
Don't you think there's a lot of people out there, some of which like to be miserable?
Well, I think if they get in the habit of being miserable, they don't know any other way to be. But I think if they could see that there might be a better way to live, they would be all for it.
Well, look at the energy that's expended being miserable. Am I correct? Energy,
okay.
Negative energy.
Yes, a lot of negative energy. And I think to be miserable, it takes a whole lot more energy from you, and it saps you of any power that you have. It certainly creates a whole lot less stress and creates misery for the people around you.
Mary, how does somebody get into that type of lifestyle pattern where, they keep repeating these types of things, negativism, these types of attitudes that create a difficult environment for a decent relationship with somebody, whether it's business, a marriage, a friendship, whatever?
Well, let me define pig.
Yeah, what is this thing, pig?
What a pig is. You can teach a pig to sing, and people look at me and say, oh, I think that sounds kind of insulting. Well, actually, a pig is an acronym for a particularly irritating guy or gal, but it could just as easily be somebody that you would say was a painfully intolerable gas bag or a pompous inane glory hound. But personally, for me, it actually started growing up, and I think that's where it starts for most people.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I grew up in a family. I have seven brothers, a sister. My house had about 1,000 square feet in it. So
that was a challenge.
Yes. Well, we were very close. It was 14 years.
You have to be in a house of 1,000 square feet.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Well, because I guess the idea is we all lived there at the same time because we were so close in age.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you live in that kind of close proximity, you kind of tend to make pigs of everybody else because, people aren't listening. Nobody wants to admit they made a mistake. Everybody seems angry. Somebody's crying. Somebody's upset with somebody else. And I just think that when we make it difficult for people to be who they are, we don't want to listen to them. We don't want to appreciate how they feel. Then it's real easy to not be who we are. And then people don't get the best of us, and we end up being somebody else's pig.
Is that an environmental situation we're talking about? Listen, you couldn't even get away from each other. You were brushing up against each other all the time in such close proximity. So does that really compound the issue?
Well, I think it compounds the issue because 9 children, all 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like that are very, very difficult. And then, you're working, you've got things to do, and I just think that I don't know that there are too many of us that go into parenthood really knowing how to really raise children, how to really communicate. And I don't know anybody that hasn't with 9 kids yelling for attention. But I don't think you have to grow up in a family of 9 children in order to experience what it feels like not being acceptable, not being able to really be who we are. I remember when I went away to college, I was asked to read a book called Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am? And boy, I'll tell you, I saw that title and I thought, that resonates with me, because I never felt like people really knew who I was, because I was afraid if they did, they might not appreciate it. Well, where does that come from? A kid is told, like, let me ask you this.
Go ahead, ask me a question.
Let me ask you this. Did this ever happen?
Interview me. I like that.
Well, let's say, for
flip instance, the card.
You ever remember when you were a kid? Maybe it didn't happen to you, but maybe it happened to a friend of yours. Mm. And the parent said, now, I want you to tell me the truth. Now, what happened here? And, of course, the child told the truth. Here's what happened. And whack! they got, you know, a spanking for it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like you're a politician, you know.
Right. Well, I know all about that. We get spanked every election time.
But tell us the truth.
And right.
There are a lot of people, if you tell the truth, they don't like you to tell the truth. And so they invite you to cover up, and you never really get to share who you really are. And that's what makes us lovely, attractive people to be around, is when we truly are who we were meant to be.
You're talking about always tell the truth?
No, I'm not suggesting that you always tell the truth.
Well,
but
you know,
I'm saying that when we make it difficult for other people,
yeah,
right, we can make it difficult by not listening, by not caring, by not accepting the fact that somebody has a different point of view. So we pretty much are saying you're not very acceptable as you are. And
yeah,
you get that when you're a little child growing up. You're beyond, before the age of reason, and that's what
correct.
Most of us happens for most of
you're
us.
You're being indoctrinated.
Yes. Hmm. And it's not to be who you are, which is really your best you.
Hmm. I like that.
Oh.
Well, because if you're running for election, you certainly don't want to tell the truth. You're going to tell somebody, look, I've got to raise taxes or lay people off? Yo, what do you think, Mary?
Yeah, well, you tell people you have to raise taxes. And
or lay people off. You're going to try to be really honest with the electorate and tell them the truth.
Well, that's why I'm saying I'm not always sure that you can be totally honest and get elected.
So what sort of message is that sending as well? Be a good liar. And I always say a good politician could take a lie detector test and win.
Yeah, well, maybe they could. Maybe they get to learn begin to believe their own lies.
Yeah, well, that's a problem. I don't know what it is. But with relationships, let's go all the way back to, again, rearing children, and we're talking about relationships. Doesn't it start off with who you choose to marry? And is there a manual there when you have two people that may be coming into a marriage, one of the individuals with issues? We're talking about issues, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I just think the operative word is always choice. It's just always choice.
Hmm.
It becomes your most powerful tool.
Right.
And as an example, this wouldn't be a married couple. This was a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
She had a 17-year-old daughter. She has a daughter. She's no longer 17, but mm-hmm. when she was 17, she started acting out. She was giving her mom absolute fits. And then Sue read You Can Teach a Pig to Sing, read the chapter. This is before it was even published. This is when I was in the throes of writing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd send her this stuff. And she read this chapter on the power of creating a personal relationship vision, and she spelled out the kind of relationship she wanted with her daughter. And as a result, instead of reacting to her daughter's rebellious behavior, mm-hmm. she started responding in a way that would actually get her the relationship she wanted. And then things changed overnight, because what she discovered is that relationships are like a dance. And when you change the steps to the dance, then you get to change the relationship. Therefore, if you create a vision for the kind of relationship you actually want with your spouse, and I always recommend people do this going into a marriage. What does the relationship look like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? How do they feel in your presence? You write it out. You focus on it. Then some kind of, I guess, relational issue arises. Instead of fixing, you know, reacting to fix the problem,
mm-hmm.
To relieve yourself of that discomfort in the moment, you actually act in a way that's going to bring about the outcome. In other words, your vision, that thing you want.
All right, give me an example. You've got a conflict between a partner. We're talking about either a marriage or a significant other.
Mm-hmm.
Reading your book, how would you start dealing with that issue?
Well, give me a little more information when you say, how would you start dealing with that issue?
Well, you're not on the same page. Let's say we're dealing with raising children. This always seems to be a little antagonism. One in the household believes, or the husband may believe, well, you got to be strict, you got to do this. Maybe the wife is the other way. Whatever it is, we're just talking about potential conflicts that parents have with reference to style of rearing children.
Yeah, and that is a big issue with a lot of people. But I'm not sure that maybe they sat down in the first place and had those conversations before they ever had children and talked through those things.
No, I realize that, but what are you going to do? Many people are in that situation, Mary. They don't sit down. I mean, let's face it. First of all, we're driven together by chemistry to start with a little bit, okay, and then all of a sudden, you know, the relationship develops, and we decide we're going to get married or live with somebody. All these kind of thought processes. What are you saying? All of a sudden, well, let's talk about having children. How are we going to deal with this? Some people don't even get to that.
No, they don't.
I mean, you know, they're just in it. In other words, they have a child, and then here we go.
Oh, this I do know, and that is when you set up an environment for the other person, let's say your spouse, where the spouse can feel totally comfortable with you. They're not going to be judged for how they feel. They're not going to be. There's not going to be anything. It's just there are two people respecting one another. Then there's the possibility of change. I mean, life is not an accident.
Correct.
It just isn't an accident that you can deal with real issues by making sure that first and foremost the relationship is off to a good start. As an example, I've done a lot of work with sales organizations. And one of the things, this is several years ago now, but I remember telling a group of salespeople that when you go out and you see you meet with a prospect or even a customer, that you take the little word exceptional, and you hang it right out there on the forefront of your conscious mind. Just hang it out front so that whenever you look, you're always looking through this prism that says exceptional. Like, that is what you're seeing in this other person. And I said, I want you to take this challenge, and when you go back to your hotel tonight, because these people would fly in from all over the country, when you go back to the hotel tonight, I want you to find somebody, and I want you to look through that prism, and I want you to just notice how the interaction between you changes with just that one thing.
Wow.
Well, people kind of rolled their eyes like, yeah, sure, this is going to make a difference. Well, I said, just try it. Will you just agree to try it?
Just do
it. Okay, we'll try it. So one woman came back the next day. I don't even remember her name. I'll call her Kristen. She came back the next day, and she said, you know, I had the most phenomenal experience. And if I hadn't experienced it, I wouldn't have believed it. She said, I'm in a hotel where they're having right now this large ethnic women's conference. Anybody from these girls look like they're probably 15, 16 years old to, like, older women, 70s, 80s. She said, I'm standing at the elevator. I'm waiting to get up. This large, she said, gang of boisterous girls. She said, you know, approached me. I approached the elevator doors, actually. When the doors opened, they kind of shoved in ahead of me. She said they had absolutely no elevator etiquette. And she said I could barely squeeze in. And when the door shut, she said I just became annoyed. I just became so aware that they were acting like such painfully irritating girls. In other words, PIGs.
Right.
And she said, and then I thought about what you said. And in a heartbeat, I just made the decision I was going to look through that prism of exceptional. That's all I did. She said, I just changed what I was thinking. And she said, if the energy in that cramped, closed, crowded elevator had not changed so rapidly, and if their reaction to me had not been so immediate, I would never have believed it. She said, I'm on the 12th floor, and when that door was open, you'd have thought that we were long lost friends time I got out. She said, believe me, from now on, I'm not going to see anybody except through that prism of exceptional.
So what'd she do? Start communicating with them?
She must have.
That's what I'm saying. There had to be something where she reached out.
Yeah, there must have. But it had to take place in her mind first by making the choice. That's why I say life is not an accident. It's always a choice. and we get to determine the climate. I mean, either we determine the climate or the other person determines the climate.
Mm-hmm.
And I say we're much more powerful as people. We have much more power than we realize to change events by making the decision that will create the kind of climate.
All right. I want to make the change, Mary. I'm married, and I am dealing with my wife, and I want to make the change, and I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I am no longer in denial. There is something that I have to start doing to think the things to turn around. But my partner doesn't enjoy the book, doesn't want to get into it, and is not prepared to deal with it. So how does one person, a couple, or let's say in a business environment where you're dealing with other employees, if you want to make the change and the rest of them are still going on their merry way, how does it work?
Well, I'd say if you're really looking for the person that can help you do that, then take a long look in the mirror.
Well, sometimes we don't have any choice when we look at ourselves.
Right. You know, you take a long look in the mirror because I have to tell you this. I had a guy in one of my programs just recently who said he went to these classes and he shanghaied his wife to come into these classes because he wanted her to learn what she didn't know about how to communicate.
Right.
And then she started accusing him of using techniques. You know, it's a technique. So whenever he'd try out the technique, she'd get upset with him, and so they have very different personalities.
Obviously,
she's kind of explosive and passionate, and he's more of a numbers guy, but kind of manipulative. And so he's trying to use a technique. And I said to him, you know, you can use all the techniques you want, and techniques are great, and my book is filled with them. But the mindset that you go into it with makes all the difference. And I said, tell me what you're doing. He shared with me what he was doing. And he was using active listening technique. Mm-hmm. And he was going in thinking, I'm going to use the technique to change my wife. When what he really needed to do was to go in and say, you know, I love my wife. She's the gift that that's been given me. And this woman is pretty incredible. And I need to genuinely receive the gift that is my wife.
Yeah.
Which means it can't be a technique when I listen to her. I genuinely want to see it and experience it from her perspective. And that is what makes the difference.
Well, it does, because let's face it. I mean, you can sit here. People will say, don't worry. They get into relationships and they say, well, don't worry. I can change that person. Give me a break. First of all, you generally were attracted to that person because of the way they were. Now, all of a sudden, you want to change the person. Give me a break.
We marry somebody for those qualities, and then we turn around and divorce them for the same qualities.
Well, that's it. Or how about these ladies that decide they fall in love with somebody in prison? You've heard these stories.
Yes, I have.
And all of a sudden, oh, I know I can change him. Oh, I can feel it. Yo, what's going on out there? What do you think? Kind of crazy, isn't it?
Well, I think it's pretty normal.
I think it's pretty normal.
I'm not saying it's healthy. I'm saying it's normal. I think it's normal that people think that there are a number of people that think they can change other people because they have not yet realized that none of us can change anyone. The only one we can change is ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But you change yourself, and you're in the best position.
And that's usually the last one we want to deal with.
Right, because it says I have to be accountable.
Well, no, you've got to accept certain things about yourself. I was reading in some of your preliminary discussions here. We're talking about understanding yourself. You know what I mean? This is really a challenge, right?
I think it is. And I think the reason that people have struggled with understanding themselves is that they maybe grew up, and I think this is true for most of us, not being found very acceptable by a lot of people. And I think that's a condition of childhood. Don't do this. You can't do this. Stop that. No, don't say that. Don't say that in front of her. Oh, how's she going to feel when you do that? In other words, we don't handle things really well when children are little because we haven't been trained to do it ourselves. It seems, what do they say, too smart, too old or something?
Yeah, but you're brought into, again, an environment. Everybody comes into life with a clean slate. And then we are, domesticated? We're not supposed to show any emotions when it has to do with guys. Girls really deal with these issues of self-esteem. So we beat the hell out of everybody, and when they become an adult, they become sour. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know the most attractive people in the world.
Talk to me.
The most attractive people in the world are people that have that see themselves as valuable and worthwhile.
Absolutely.
They are the most attractive. But in order to be that attractive, we have to be very vulnerable. I mean, vulnerability is a key to that attraction. I remember once sitting at a National Speakers Association convention. I'm sitting with over 2,000 people in the back of a ballroom. It's darkened. We're at round tables. There's a business speaker on stage. He's way up there in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And I am mesmerized. You could hear a pin drop in that room. This man was like, whoa, talk about the having full attention of 2,000 people. It was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I did something I never do. I bought the videotape.
Right.
Buying the videotape, because I want my husband to see it. You've got to see this guy. He's so good.
Hmm.
I get the videotape, pop this thing in. We start watching, and I mean, I'm looking at it. Finally, my husband says, well, like, when does it get good? And I said, well, just a minute. He's got to get good here. And then, well, you know, finally after about 20 minutes, I said, I guess it's not going to get good. And I'll tell you, it puzzled me. And I thought about that for several days. And then one day, it just like out of the clear blue, and it came to me. And I thought, you know what? Because I kept saying, well, what was he doing? What was he doing? And it came to me. He wasn't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing. That man was so powerful because he wasn't doing anything. He was just being totally authentic, totally vulnerable, totally himself. But you see, most of us are not raised to be that vulnerable.
Well, you know as well as I know, well, vulnerability is something that if you leave yourself vulnerable, we're talking about generically, theoretically, somebody can betray you. We're talking about friendships, whatever
yes,
it is.
Can.
So to be able to get into a good relationship anyway, you're going to have to show some vulnerability. Otherwise, the relationship never develops, does it?
That's right.
I mean, you can't sit there and be on guard. In other words, my impression when I meet somebody the first time, I give them the benefit of the doubt. There are many people that just say, well, wait a minute, they are always on their toes. Why don't they give the person an opportunity to either prove or disprove themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct?
Yes, I think you are correct.
Well, why do we do that? Is that basically because we're trying to protect ourselves? Rejection, this or that? Particularly in intimate relationships.
Well, you know, I think that we are.
We're all about ourselves.
Fears we're born with, but you know, I know we're born with the fear of falling, fear of loud noises, or maybe a couple of other things. But before we ever each reach the age of reason, we've developed three major fears. We develop the fear of loss of acceptance. We could say loss of love, loss of identity. We develop the fear of loss of control.
Right.
Loss of control, we could say loss of status, loss of position, loss of money, that all falls under the same category.
Sure.
We could say loss of esteem, like the fear that comes from turning in a poor performance, or we could say fear of failure. But we develop all of those fears.
Mm-hmm.
So if we've got those fears going, then we perceive anything that sort of threatens threatens who we are, because we've now learned we're getting our good feelings from other people or certain situations or whatever.
Right, misguided.
We get defensive.
Right. Well, because we don't want to get...
We have to recognize what the real fear is and then challenge the fear, because the fear is really not the truth.
Well, the very fear itself is prohibiting you from moving on or prohibiting you from solving it. The fear of failure... And again, rejection, whatever it may be,
right,
totally paralyzes you.
Mm-hmm. But the beauty is that...
The beauty. Go ahead.
Yes, the beauty is that you're paralyzed, but when you're paralyzed, if people could stop and ask themselves three questions. One, what am I thinking? What am I really feeling? And what am I telling myself?
Mm-hmm.
Can I give you an example?
Well, listen, go right ahead.
Yeah. Well,
I like this.
Okay. Well, I do too.
Good.
I belong to an organization that has women from young women in their 20s all the way to women in their late 80s.
Mm.
And one night I was asked to pick up a woman that's probably 85 years old who had just broken her leg or her hip. And
wow.
I mean, it was freezing cold. The wind was blowing, the snow was blowing, and I really hadn't dressed warmly enough to spend a lot of time outdoors, but I hadn't planned to spend a lot of time outdoors. I was going to a meeting. We were going to a meeting. Forgot to tell you that.
Sure.
We were going to a meeting, and so I was asked if I'd pick her up. So I picked her up, and she was with a walker, and it took us 10 minutes to get from her front door, just down her steps.
Wow.
Right into the car.
Into the car.
I am freezing. And I am thinking to myself, three things, you know, like, why did I get asked to pick you up? Why are you going to this? I am freezing. You shouldn't even be out tonight.
Right. And you're saying that to yourself, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And I was feeling two things. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you shouldn't be out. I'm freezing. You have no business going to this meeting. You're not ambulatory enough to be doing this.
Right.
Can you hear that negativity?
Well, you got an attitude already.
I did.
Oh, wow.
But on the other hand, I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm so glad I'm not you. You know what I mean? On the one hand, I was feeling badly for this woman because I thought, so I'm giving her credit for being 85 years old in really not good physical condition.
Yeah, doing this, yeah.
Doing this. And so I'm thinking, yes, I hope when I'm 85, if I'm ever in a position like that I'm doing it. But by the same token, I'm thinking, I'm freezing, and why did I get asked to pick her up?
Right, you were being put upon.
Yes, that's how I was feeling.
Too bad.
So I took her home, and the same thing happened, of course, once I took her home. And I got home, and I said to my husband, you know, I feel really bad. I feel very torn.
Yeah.
I feel guilty because of how I felt. And he said, well, why don't you do what you tell other people to do? And I said, oh, well, okay. He said, what were you thinking? And I said, I was thinking that I'm glad I'm not her because you'd have to be with me.
Yeah, well, okay.
And I'm not real happy.
Right.
I was also thinking that I gave the woman a lot of credit, but at the same token, I was thinking, you should have stayed home tonight. So I was very, very conflicted.
Well, did she pick up the vibes, you think?
Oh, I don't know. I just had to work real hard.
I mean, you had to work real hard to cover it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then, of course, the feeling was, my feeling was, I was feeling guilty. I was feeling guilty for having those feelings. And I did have certainly some empathy for her, but mostly I was feeling irritated at the time.
Right.
And I was feeling guilty, all at the same, in the same breath. And then...
Yeah.
The third question. Yeah, was what was I really telling myself?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stopper. Because when you say to yourself, what am I really telling myself?
Mm-hmm.
You get at the truth. And what I was really telling myself is now I am duty-bound to pick this woman up at every meeting. Now I have no choice. Now I am trapped.
Well, wait a minute.
And then I stopped and I said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I said.
Mixed messages.
Wait a minute. And I thought, are you trapped? Are you duty-bound? No. This is a choice. You were asked once. You said yes. You always have an option of saying no.
No.
Or you always have the option of just not doing it.
Well, if you say no, you're going to feel guilty.
Well, actually, but I thought no.
No.
Because sometimes
mm-hmm.
I can't make it. But you know what it did by telling myself the truth, that I was irritated with her?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that I was annoyed, that I was feeling guilty. And then what am I really telling myself? I got to look at what it was I was really telling myself, which is that I had no choice.
Yeah.
And I challenged that and found out, oh, no, but you do have a choice. And the minute I could free myself from, oh, I do have a choice, then I just felt immediately like a weight was lifted. And then I actually felt much more giving, thinking, you know, I think the next meeting I'm going to call her up and ask her if she'd like a ride. Because I no longer felt like I was a victim.
Do you think sometimes we're complicated?
I do.
It's unbelievable. Matter of fact, I think the reason you wrote this book is basically through your experiences struggling with these issues, right?
Absolutely.
Starting all the way back with a family of what did you say? 11? 9?
Nine children.
Nine? It's almost like being stuffed in that elevator, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You think Colin's not listening to you, huh?
And seven of them were male, so, you know, with my dad now, so that was a lot of male testosterone.
Well, you know, and that's the worst, and that sometimes is the worst enemy of a man. We can't help ourselves.
I know.
In any event, let's take a break. I'm going to just see if Mean Dean is there. We got to take a quick break here. You hang on again, and it's Mary Jane Mapes.
Yes.
Keep going. Stay out of these tight elevators. We'll be back in a minute. We're on AM 970 WSTX. Interesting discussion. We'll be back in a minute. All right, we're back. A pleasant good afternoon again to each and every one of you out there. St. Croix, St. Thomas, St. John, Water Island. You are on Straight Talk with Redfield, and I'm on with Mary Jane Mapes. Mary Jane, we're talking about this acronym PIG. Talk to me a little bit about how do I know if somebody is looking at me as one of these folks that is intolerable? How do I know that people are getting bad vibes themselves out of me? As a talk show host, I got to be worried about that, don't I?
Well.
Maybe nobody's listening to us. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I doubt that.
I doubt that.
I think you're quite interesting.
Well, it's the other way around. Yeah, I think you're quite interesting.
Well, you know what makes you so interesting?
And talk
I mean,
to
this,
me.
This should not be missed by our listeners.
Really, what?
Really, and that is that you actually take an interest in the person you're interviewing.
Well, I am. I first of all looked at your picture. I said, my God, what a beautiful woman. Second of all to that, I said, she not only looks good, she's smart.
Oh,
how am I going to handle this? Holland is intimidated. Flattery will get you everywhere, won't it? Huh?
What was your question?
No, but you are. No, I'm saying, you know, people,
you know
what I'm saying to you. All right. I don't know, just like everybody else probably has a big question mark of what people think about yourself. What I mean, me, okay? And I'm talking about you. You could ask me in under first impressions, what do I think about you? But as we, you know, we're like in a small community or anywhere. It can be in an office. It could be anything. What do we really know of how people think of us? And whether we are turning them off or we are, you know, creating a bad environment, sometimes people are blind to that.
You know, I pose the question here. People are blind to that, but I honestly think that there may be some people that aren't as aware. You know, they say awareness is the beginning of change. So we kind of have to put those antenna up and really start becoming more aware. But I do believe that most of us, if we're at all present to the situation, if we're at all present, we do sense things.
Right.
Maybe no one has said it. Maybe no one has done anything specifically, but there is a sense. Well, I once read that people are reading our minds at 7,200 images a minute.
Yes.
So if they're reading our mind at 7,200 images a minute because body language, they're just these little almost imperceptible aspects of body language. It might just be, you know, a twitch of the lip or a flick of the eyelid or something that gives us away. And so I think if we're at all aware, we can pick up on how people are experiencing us.
I know a good example. We could just use it as actually viewing yourself. Have you ever, I can remember when I was a very small boy, and, you know, I remember my mother was picking out a suit for me. In any event, I was in a clothing store, and it was the first time I got exposed to a particular type of mirror. And I actually could see the back of me. I had never seen the back of me.
Mm.
I don't know what I look like when I'm walking away from somebody. Right?
Right, and some of us don't want to know.
Well, no. Well, some of us are more blessed than others. Now, however that. Now, you use that as an example, but now we're talking about the character of the person, the impressions you make, people that are your acquaintances or your friends or whatever. Nobody really knows what somebody honestly feels about somebody, do they?
Guess we know what someone feels about us if, number one, there are things about them that tell us.
Yeah.
And different people
that's providing
have different
your per, that's providing your perceptive. Some people are not perceptive.
Yeah. Well, and we also need to be knowledgeable of what those things are. I mean, there is a good book called The Five Love Languages, which I recommend to people.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, somebody might be doing acts of service, for instance, for you all the time. And if you're a person that perhaps really prefers gifts.
Yeah. Well,
you know, if you send me a gift, then I'll know you love me. But if you
right.
do an act of service, well, then I'm not so sure. So I think part of it is we just don't always understand the intentions of the other person, and therein is a problem. So once we have a better understanding of other people's intentions and how they demonstrate those.
Well, let's talk about, for instance, frankness.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes being frank with somebody can be subject to how long you've known the person. And I'm not talking about putting somebody down, just outright being frank. Telling it how it is, like straight talk.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's my show. I don't put any fringes or ruffles around anything. I talk straight on issues. And I try not to be opinionated. However, sometimes people respond to frankness differently.
Well, they do. And if it is perceived as a criticism,
right,
then it probably will not be very well received. But there is a way. And this I have in the book, You Can Teach a Pig to Sing, and that is it's a formula that's powerful, and it works, and you can take any difficult conversation where you're really asking for a behavioral change
mm-hmm.
and turn that other person around.
Well, so talk to me about this formula.
Talk
to me about the formula.
Well, let me share with you the first part of it.
Go right ahead.
I think this is how you set it up, and this is some of the most important aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
But partner is really an acronym, and the P is for positive intentions, where you know, the biggest reason for conflict is a conflict of unspoken, unknown intentions.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I may say to you, I know that your intent is to get this job done right, that you don't want to let anything fall through the cracks. You want to make sure that, you know, every stone is unturned, you know, overturned.
Correct.
So that you can make sure that you're turning in a quality product.
Mm-hmm.
My intent is to get it out the door so that our customers are in a position to get their products in a timely manner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something has come up. Now, that's the P. The A is ask. It's where you ask for permission to have the conversation. Now, so far, you know, I know that your intent is that. And if that really is your intent, what are you going to say? If I say, I know that your intent is to have a quality product, you want to make sure that every I is dotted and T is crossed.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say if that were true?
Well, you know, if it was possibly displacing me and making me uncomfortable in a work situation, I would say, you know, get a life. I'm not going to go along with this.
But the thing is,
you're asking me to do something now.
Yeah, but
like with the lady with the walker, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, but in this situation, I really would know what your intent is.
Okay.
I mean, because I know you.
Oh, okay.
I know you are a nitpicker for detail.
Right.
I know you're a nitpicker for detail. And I know that quality is what it's all about for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I say to you, I know that your intent. I could give another example. Let's say I'm a member of the law firm. I'm just using this as an example, but let's say I'm a member
mm-hmm.
of the law firm and you
mm-hmm.
are one of my partners, or you're not a partner yet.
Right.
You're a young fledgling, but you want to become a partner someday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm literally making this up off the top of my head.
All right.
And let's say...
Hold on. Caller? Hello? Well, Mary,
hello?
Mary, hold on 1 minute. A call just came in. Probably wants to ask a question. Good afternoon. You're on Straight Talk. Well, at Government House, we are going to try, we did on St. Thomas in St. Croix, we are going to try to make contact with the chief executive and the lieutenant governor.
What time will that be?
Well, hopefully sometime within the next 15, 20 minutes.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. All right. I'm sorry, Mary, we just got interrupted a little
That's
bit.
That's okay.
That's all right. I thought it was maybe a caller for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
We're talking about partner, and I wanted to describe the first three pieces of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the P is positive intent, but and I set up the scenario and said, if you know, let's say I'm a fairly new person in a law firm. You are a managing partner. We go to meetings. I'm in the meeting, and let's say I am continuously interrupting people. You like me. I'm bright. I'm this. I'm that. You know, you'd like to see me succeed, but boy, this interrupting people is really getting on everybody's nerves. So you come to me and you say, Mary Jane, I know that your intent is to do a good job, that your intent is to ultimately one day be promoted to partner. Now, you know what I'd say to you if you said that? I'd say, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
My intent is to do a good job, and yes, I would definitely like to be promoted to partner.
Yeah, but your methodology in trying to get there, you were making other people uncomfortable.
Right, but I'm not going to say that. Remember,
no, I understand.
You're talking to me.
I'm talking
and
to
so
you.
Then you might follow that up by saying, well, you know, Mary Jane, my intent is to mentor you. Let's say you've taken on that role.
Mm-hmm.
My intent is to mentor you in such a way that I can help you accomplish some of the goals that you've set for yourself. Now, is there going to be anything in that that would cause me to not want to listen to you so far?
No, I feel comfortable with
that. Okay, then you come back, and now the A part of it is where you ask, and you may
mm-hmm.
say something like this. You may say, Mary Jane, I've been noticing something lately that I think could stand in your way of accomplishing the goals you're hoping to accomplish.
Right.
And I'd like to have a conversation with you about that.
Right.
Would you be open?
Oh, absolutely. You're being very diplomatic.
Yeah, well, but it's the language, see.
Right, it's the way you're approaching it.
Yeah, but this is the part. Then the third part is PAR,
mm-hmm.
And that is then where you retell what happened.
Yeah.
So, and then it goes on from there. But what most people do not recommend, I mean, I've never seen it anywhere, where they actually recommend those first couple of statements about identifying intentions and asking that question that will benefit the person who will be on the receiving end. I've never had a conversation like that with somebody that they did not thank me for the conversation. They were delighted, and people that have used this formula have come back and said, oh my gosh, I never realized how easy it could
mm-hmm.
be. I mean, there were places in there where I had to listen,
right.
But my goodness, thank you for giving
me. Well, you exerted effort, though, Mary. A lot of people don't want to do that, and I'm merely speaking to you, and I like what you're saying. However, you know, you are making a special effort to be able to do this,
mm-hmm.
and you are really breaking the person down where they're going to be receptive to criticism, but it will be done in a positive way. So you're building trust.
Exactly.
Once you get into that situation, I find out whether it is with a salesman or a politician or whoever is trying to get recognized, they overpush. And I always say to a person like that when I have a close relationship with them, never serve the wine before it's time.
Yeah.
Be patient. And the problem is with a salesperson, and you've gone through this, and, of course, they're trained to do this. You go into, let's say, a jewelry store, and there are three or four that are hounding you. Is there anything I can do for you? Is there something specific you want? No, I don't want anything.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly buy this way. I go into a place, and I look. And if something I like, I buy it. But this over-pushing, we're talking about either salespeople or we're talking about a boss who is trying to push an employee beyond, beyond their capabilities
mm-hmm.
at a certain time. But don't you think these are things that are, well, really confuse the whole issue?
People that push?
Yeah.
Well,
you're dealing right now with talking to somebody who's too pushy, let's say.
Uh-huh.
All right. You're talking about somebody who goes into a meeting, just arrives at this organization, and starts trying to be the belle of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
The person may have very good intents, but it's the methodology. In other words, be a little more sophisticated. Wait a little bit. Calm down. Everything has its time and place. And I find this drive for success sometimes gets in everybody's way to the point where they stumble over their own feet.
Yes. Yes, they do. And,
right.
You know, a lot of it is personality, I think. Different personalities
mm-hmm.
are just more dominant and pushy and try to get their own way. But I found that even with those personalities, if you actually listen,
I mean
actively listen to what they want to say. You know, there's a saying that says if you want somebody to go where you want them to go, you always begin where they are. So if you actually listen, and of course with that type, with that, I call it dominant type
person,
you begin where they are, but you need to do it quickly. Everything needs to be done quickly. And because they usually are so forceful and they're so upfront and so direct, they actually appreciate it when you're being
direct
in return. So rather, what they don't like is when you allow yourself to be stepped on, because then they'll just really start trouncing you.
Well, I'll tell you, you have taken on an unbelievable book to start with, and dealing with the human mind, ambitions, or dealing with suspicions, all these kind of things that get in our way. What was your epiphany in your life that drove you to write these books or get interested in this type of topic? Something happened to you.
Yeah, well, the thing that happened to me, of course, was growing up in the family that I grew up
in. Oh, we're all going all the way back into that 1,000 square foot.
And then there was the book, Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am? And I thought, wow, it's not just me who's masquerading as someone that I'm not. Because I'm going all the way back to when I was 18 years old. Hmm. But it was like, I'm sure that there are people listening to this who say, whoa, that's me. That's me. People don't really know me. People don't really appreciate me. I mean, there are people that lie in bed at night, look at the ceiling, and say to themselves, why can't people be more like me? Why does everything have to be so much drama? Why am I not appreciated?
Well, I don't know.
I really don't know what to do about it.
Well, so let me tell you.
I just said I needed to help people find out what I did, which is, you know, you don't have to be in this pain. You don't have to suffer. There really is something you can do about it. And I would say, you know, if I were to offer one piece of advice.
Throw it out.
It really is, you can accept the status quo and things are going to stay just like they are. Or you can accept responsibility, and when you do that, then you get to create the relationships you want. And if you start by asking yourself every single day, who do I need to be today to have the kind of relationships that I want tomorrow?
Do you think women are better at this than men?
Not necessarily.
Oh, really? You think us guys are better than, this introspection that you're taking me through?
I don't necessarily mean that men or women are better.
No, I'm saying relating to this book, I'm talking about being complicated. There are a lot of complicated things that we all deal with. Do you think women deal with these better than men or men?
I think women have been given more permission to focus on relationships because they need to. They need to. I mean, women.
So that's because the balancing act you're on, am I correct?
Family.
Raising family, working, this and that, right?
Yes, but I think some of that is changing.
Oh, yeah, it is. Sure.
And has changed with the nature of the family has changed. Women in the workforce. I mean, women leaving the home and going out to work. And, I mean, it seems like everything has been turned upside down. And I talk to probably as many women as I do men that struggle in their relationships. And of course, when they come, it's always, here's what he's done to me, or here's what she's doing. How do I change that? But mostly what they are saying is, how do I get them to change? And I say, there's a computer term that says, you've probably heard of this.
Yeah.
Tell me if you have.
Yeah.
But it says, it's called requisite variety.
Oh.
And it says that in any system, whether it be human or machine, when one part of the system changes, it causes the other parts to change whether they want to or not. So
if
you change your step, the other person has to change.
Well, every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. You can talk about chemistry. You can talk about emotions, feelings, dealing with people.
Exactly.
When you approach something, somebody is going to respond to you. The hardest one is to get yourself to respond to yourself.
Well, that's an interesting thing.
Well, it is.
No.
You and I are on the same wavelength. Listen, you're an expert at this. I'm just walking through this with you. But I have noticed when you deal with relationships, and you have hit the nail on the head several times, I think, you say it maybe in a different way. It's really dealing with ourselves. When we crawl into bed at night, you know, and we're looking up at the ceiling and we're talking to ourselves, you know, we really have got to deal with ourselves before we deal with people around us. But that's the last one in the world. That's why I use that analogy, looking in a mirror as a young boy and never seeing myself in a different angle. We're just talking about visually.
Yeah, that was a great analogy.
You know what I mean?
By the way. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know, but, you know, it hit me hit me right over the head. In any event, how do we get a hold of your book? I'm going to have to switch to Washington. I'm going to be interviewing Ann Wagner. I don't know whether you're a Republican. There's a challenge for the national chairmanship of our party, and this would be the first female elected as national chairman if she gets in.
Then this is the Republican Party.
The Republican Party, mm-hmm. Yes. You probably heard of Michael Steele. Mm-hmm. He's in the news, African-American. He is now the chairman. He's being challenged by six mm-hmm. others. And I am a Republican and a national committee man, and it's part of my responsibility to make a choice for the territory.
Well, let's just put it this way. I when I'm on the radio, I generally don't, they know who you are. And I just say, you know what, I certainly have strong political views,
mm-hmm.
and mine is not a political platform as
right.
much as it is a relationship platform.
Well, your platform is far...
I'm very interested yeah. in who they're going to... I'm very interested in who they're going to select, and I do hope that they select the right person for that job.
Well,
it
is always a challenge. Let me just speak to you. It's just like with relationships. You know, the best man, the best woman doesn't always win in politics. And again, as you know, with relationships, everything is fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Everything changes, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So how do we get a hold of your book?
Well, boy, I wish I could say you could get a hold of it today, but people will be able to get a hold of it on Amazon.com, but it looks like that's not going to happen for at least 3 more weeks. But if they want to order a book,
right.
they can call my number. I'll give them an 800 number. Now, this is in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
It is 800-851-2270, 800-851-2270, and they can let me know they want it, give me their address, and I'll make sure that they are aware when that book is available.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you've been a delight, and I want to thank you very much for the interview. We got to do this again.
You know what? Can I give you one more thing?
Yeah, go right ahead.
How about if they email me?
Sure, go right ahead.
Is it safe to put your email out there on the...
Yeah, certainly. I mean, come on. Be brave, girl. Come
on.
Have
them email me at MaryJane at MaryJaneMapes. M as in Mabel, A, P as in Peter, E, S as in Sam. MaryJaneMapes.com. And let me know they want a book. Now I will have an actual written record, which will be a whole lot easier. And I'll make sure they know immediately when the book is available. But you know what? There is a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow if they get this book. Because when they read it, they're going to walk away with
no, really. You know, and I mean that sincerely. Anybody out there, so many of us go through these kind of struggles, whether it's mm-hmm. relationships with our family, our significant others, business relationships. These are, skills that we've got to learn to develop, and you certainly have given us a roadmap to do it.
Thank you so much.
This has been a delight.
Sure has for me.
I want to thank you very much. We'll let you go. At this point, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute, and hopefully we're going to shift to Washington, D.C. We're on AM 970 WSDX.